हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 53. Krishna presented himself as an innocent child to increase the transcendental ecstasy of maternal affection. As described in the Shastra, Tadana Bhayan Mit Yogtir Vatsalya Rasa Poshika. This means that sometimes a small child speaks lies. For example, he may have stolen something or eaten something and yet deny that he has done so. We ordinarily see this in the material world, but in relation to Krishna, it is different. Such activities are meant to endow the devotee with transcendental ecstasy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was playing as a liar and accusing all the other devotees of being liars. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.11, Krita Punya Punjaha. A devotee may attain such an ecstatic position after many, many bursts of devotional service. Persons who have amassed the results of a vast amount of pious activities can attain the stage of associating with Krishna and playing with him like ordinary playmates. So here that pious activities means devotional, not mundane. Like that. One should not consider these transactions of transcendental service to be untruthful accusations. One should never accuse such devotees of being ordinary boys speaking lies, for they attain this stage of associating with Krishna by great austerities. Tapasa brahmacharyena samena cha dhamena cha. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.13. Yeah. So there's great austerities of not being attached to things in the world, right? Like that. So giving that up and trying for something higher, like this. So doing that in devotional service, then they're able to come to this position of serving Krishna in this way. Mother Yashoda challenged Krishna, if you have not eaten earth, then open your mouth wide, right? He's already suggested it being innocent that you can check, but probably hoping that she doesn't check. You know. When challenged by his mother in this way, Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, to exhibit pastimes like a human child, opened his mouth. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of all opulences, did not disturb his mother's parental affection, his opulence was automatically displayed, for Krishna's opulence is never lost at any age, but is manifest at the proper time. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Krishna, afraid of punishment, told a lie in order that Mother Yashoda could not detect his fault. Right? Because, in other words, they were right. He had eaten dirt. How could he do this, however? If he were to open his mouth, the evidence would be found. The answer is given in this verse. He possesses unimpeded, non-contradictory power. Avyahata Aishwaryaha. He whose power is undefeated does not seek out this power because of the influence of sweetness of love. But looking for service, it finds some opportunity. Right? So he didn't use it. He wasn't trying to, oh, okay, now I'll bewilder her with this, and that way she won't know. It's just that all these opulences, they're there to serve the Lord. Just like we see, they're there to serve the devotee. So then when they see an opportunity, then they present themselves. But looking for service, it finds some opportunity. Inspired by the boy's power of Satya Sankalpa, those who very desire must be fulfilled. This unimpeded Aishwarya on its own manifested the universal form. And Yashoda, lost in astonishment, forgot to scold her son. Was it necessary for Krishna to taste the sweetness of prema and thus have to show fear of being beaten. He could have stood there without fear, taking the help of his Aishwarya Shakti, thinking, I am the Lord. The answer is found in the words, Krida Manuja Balakaha. This means that Krishna was taking the form of a human child to perform mainly playful, sweet pastimes. Right? So he can do that, but then why do that? Then what's the point of having parents and this and that? You know, because if you have parents, you're not going to be afraid that if you do something wrong, there'll be trouble. You know, you don't think you have to follow them or do things like that. Then what's the whole point of the relationship in the first place? Right? So it's about having these pastimes, these human pastimes. So like a human child. Then you get the sweetness, because it's about the taste that's there. Being God, his existence is God. Right? So that's not a problem. He doesn't need to manifest these pastimes to prove that. He's manifesting these pastimes so that he can taste this interaction with the devotees. Right? That's why he's there. That's why we see Yogamaya covers to some degree even the Vaikuntha Wallas, because it's not just about his being God. It's about having that mood of love and affection to serve God. So there has to be some covering of Yogamaya, otherwise then how they would function. Right? So that's why even they consider the Lord's pastime sweet. But it's sweet within the context of majesty. But then you see in Braj, it's just sweet in the context of sweetness. Yes. You had. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Krishna opened his mouth wide by the order of Mother Yashoda, right, because she said, therefore he opened his mouth, she saw within his mouth all moving and non-moving entities, outer space and all directions, along with mountains, islands, oceans, the surface of the earth, the blowing wind, fire, the moon, and the stars. She saw the planetary systems, water, light, air, sky, and creation by transformation of ahankar. She also saw the senses, the mind, sense perception, and the three qualities, goodness, passion, ignorance. She saw the time allotted for the living entities. She saw natural instinct and the reactions of karma. And she saw desires and different varieties of bodies, moving and non-moving. Seeing all these aspects of the cosmic manifestation, along with herself and Vrindavan Dham, she became doubtful and fearful of her son's nature. So we see here, as it wasn't just before, that he just saw... things off the rug. So she saw the universal form, but then in here she's seeing the aspects of the secondary creation, the primary creation, and then even beyond. So all the subtle, the metaphysical, all these things are being manifested. So, you know, even a bigger universal form than the first one. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments, because all these manifestations came from Govinda, they could all be visible within the mouth of Govinda. Right? Because he's the source of everything. He is everything. So technically, if you look in his mouth, you should be able to see everything. So then it's not a problem. Quite astonishingly, Mother Yashoda was afraid because of intense maternal affection. She could not believe that within the mouth of her son such things could appear. Yet she saw them, and therefore she was struck with fear and wonder. Right? Because she's going to be thinking, what's going on? Because she has a relationship with Krishna, and so out of fear she doesn't want that relationship to change. Just like we have fear in the material world because we don't want our relationship with Krishna to change. Right? We're God, and he somehow or another happens to also be there. Right? So when, you know, so we're afraid of that he's going to be God and I'm not. Right? So that's the fear of surrender. That's the fear of this. That's actually the basis of maintaining these material attachments and using all kinds of things. Oh, it's called the yuga and this and that. I don't have to surrender. Right? Mother Yashoda began to argue within herself. Is this a dream or is it an illusory creation by the external energy? Has this been manifested by my own intelligence, or is it some mystic power of my child? Right? So all these different things are there. So The last one is manifest by the child. That's the one she's trying to avoid. The other ones, okay, it's a dream. It's an illusory creation. It's manifest by her own intelligence. That explains it off. The relationship stays the same. But if it's a mystic power of a child, now then there'll be a problem. Right? Srila Prabhupada comments. When Mother Yashoda saw this wonderful manifestation within the mouth of her child, she began to argue within herself about whether it was a dream. Then she considered, I am not dreaming because my eyes are open. I am actually seeing what is happening. I am not sleeping, nor am I dreaming. Then maybe this is an illusion created by Deva Maya. But that is also not possible. What business would the demigods have showing such things to me? Right? Because I'm just some lady in a village with my kid. Why would they get involved? Right? I am an insignificant woman with no connection with the demigods. Why should they take the trouble to put me into Deva Maya? That is also not possible. Right? So even though you see, they're simple villagers, but actually so intelligent, right? To be able to consider all this properly. Then Mother Yashoda considered whether the vision might be due to bewilderment. Am I fit in health? Am I not diseased? Why should there be any bewilderment? It is not possible that my brain is deranged, since I am ordinarily quite fit to think. Then this vision must be due to some mystic power of my son, as predicted by Gargamuni. Thus she finally concluded that the vision was due to her son's activities and nothing else. Mother Yashoda continued, therefore let me surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offer my obeisances unto him, who is beyond the conception of human speculation, the mind, activities, words, and arguments, who is the original cause of this cosmic manifestation, by whom the entire cosmos is maintained, by whom we can conceive of its existence. Let me simply offer my obeisances, for he is beyond my contemplation, speculation, and meditation. He is beyond all of my material activities. Right? So the point is that it's not that they don't know all these things about the Lord, it's just they don't attribute these things to Krishna. They attribute it to Vishnu. You know, but not to Krishna. So now she's saying that Krishna's doing it. So then now she's attributing to him. So you see, you end up with the same rasa like you get in Dwarka, where they can see him in both of these. They'll see in one or they'll see in the other. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Rejecting the last reason regarding Gargamuni's prediction of her son being like Lord Narayana, on seeing her son's hunger, thirst, naughtiness, and innocence. I was thinking, and innocence. What is that? And innocence. And not being able to come to any conclusion, she offered respects to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the real cause of all things, which are beyond all argument. For her son's welfare, he is the shelter of the visible universe, tat ashraya. He gives rise to the universe, yataha. He is the visible cause of the universe, yena. He cannot be understood by persons like me, durvibhayam. I pay my respects to his lotus feet, tadpadam, with intelligence, mind, actions, and words. May he please take away all disturbances from my child. So, seeing as that, she then, as Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, she rejected that one and just took it as somehow or another by the arrangement of Lord Vishnu himself, that she's seeing all this until she's surrendering to him because he's the greatest, and that any difficulty for her son be taken away. Okay. Srila Prabhupada adds, one simply has to realize the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should not try to understand him by any material means, subtle or gross. Mother Yashoda, being a simple woman, could not find out the real cause of the vision. Therefore, out of maternal affection, she simply offered obeisances unto the Supreme Lord to protect her child. Right? Because Shastra mentions that you can't understand why something is happening. What's the cause of it? You know, because generally you look at something, try to figure out the cause of something. But if you can't figure it out, it doesn't make any sense. Then you can know that it is going back to Krishna, because everything goes back to him. So ultimately, it's his arrangement. And so with that in mind, then we can surrender to the Lord and from that position of Krishna consciousness move forward in whatever the situation is. Right? Yeah, so she's doing that. She could do nothing but offer obeisances to the Lord. It is said, Achintya kalau te bhava natams tarkena yojayet. Mahabharata, Bhishma Parva, 5:22. One should not try to understand the supreme cause by argument or reasoning. When we are beset by some problem for which we can find no reason, there is no alternative than to surrender to the Supreme Lord and offer him our respectful obeisances. Then our position will be secure. This was the means adopted in this instance also by Mother Jashoda. Right?
When Mother Yashoda had any type of difficulty, or Krishna was in any type of trouble, she would always ask for protection from Lord Narayana.
Mm-hmm.
So if devotees do the same for their kids, it's still considered material. Because
who's the kid? In other words, the process is the same, but who's the kid? Who's Mother Jashoda's kid? Okay, who's our kid? Maybe not the Supreme Lord.
But
not exactly. You know, some, how you say?
The jiva.
Yeah, some empowered jiva like that, yeah. So, the point is that the process is the same. We're surrendering to Krishna in connection with the child, and so then that has that Krishna conscious aspect, because we're that, and we get benefit from that. But the aspect that it's for our material attachment, that will be the weak part of it. Right? But now, if it's about that, the protection of the child, so they can be Krishna conscious, and that, because here they want the child to benefit. So Krishna already is Krishna conscious, so they don't have to ask for that. Our child may not be, so therefore that's why we ask for it. Then it has on a further purpose. Then the cause of our attachment is actually just the interaction of the modes of nature, that our nature has that position to take on the parental aspect and the child's nature is to take on that, but it's actually those potencies are coming from the Lord. So to take those positions and all that is coming from the Lord. You see that, then now we've removed all any trace of anything. Right? But if in doing this, then we remember that, remember pray to Krishna for that, and then remember how Krishna and Mother Yashoda, then you also accomplish the same thing, if not in a more sweet way, without the mechanical aspect of the universal form. But the point is that one's gone beyond the attachment aspect. But going beyond the attachment doesn't mean the form doesn't remain the same, because children behave like that, parents like this, this is how they deal, and so that's going to remain, not that when I come to that realization then I don't have to interact with the children anymore. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, because this is how it works. Is that something? Srila Prabhupada adds, okay, no, we already did that part. Mother Jashoda continued, "It is by the influence of the Supreme Lord's Maya that I am wrongly thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband, that Krishna is my son, and that because I am the queen of Nanda Maharaj, all the wealth of cows, calves are my possessions, and all the cowherd men and their wives are my subjects. Actually, I also am eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord. He is my ultimate shelter." Right, so this moment then brings that out, because they are devotees. So then devotees, then they'll see in this way. So that aspect of the Lord as God, that they still understand and appreciate in that. But the point is they're absorbed in serving him as Krishna. But if you bring out that other aspect, then, you know, it's not that they don't know. That's why you see is when it comes to discussing Mayavad philosophy, Mother Jashoda can defeat Lord Chaitanya in that discussion. But when he goes down to the bank of the river, no one can defeat him. Right? So the whole point is, you have that aspect. It's not that they don't know the philosophy. It's just that you're just applying it. So you don't have to, you know, think about it. When they do, they know so much. But at the same time, it's just all about what will please Krishna. So that sweetness is that. That's what then allows her to defeat him.
In this particular case where it mentions that if you surrender unto Krishna with any problems, so then the position will be secure. So here the position is basically that I am the servant of Krishna, that will be secure. Plus, the material position may or may not be secure.
The material position, if we surrender to Krishna, will be secure. So then you're The question is then, does that mean both the spiritual and the material, or only the spiritual?
Yeah. Spiritual,
yeah, the spiritual is secure. The material, that's up to Krishna, how he wants the interaction to unfold. Because the point is it's, if it's about interacting with him, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if we're interacting with Krishna, what does it matter whether the material situation is secure or not? But in any case, since it's under his control, the only one that can secure it is Krishna. Therefore, then, if there is a need for that security, then you pray to him for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're fully surrendered to Krishna, he'll take care of whatever it is, then you're not praying for that.
Mm-hmm.
The point is whatever you need is Krishna. Right? You turn to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Mother Jashoda considers, the Lord is my son's maintainer and protector. If that is so, then what is the use of my ignorant concept of I and mine? Giving up her false conceptions and surrendering to the Lord, Jashoda speaks, I think I am the mother of this child who is the life of the residents of Braja. I am his nourisher, and by worship of devatas and Brahmins through meditation and charities, by daily worship of Vishnu, I, by myself, can give protection to my son. This is all misconception. As all of Braja's wealth is given by the mercy of Vishnu, I shall not be proud. Similarly, since by his mercy the child was protected at every moment from the demons like Putana, I should not think that I, as a mother among the common cowherds, with impure sentiments, am his protector. Right, so she's being Krishna conscious. This type of logic is temporary, not permanent, in Jashoda. So in Dwarka, it's a standard feature. It's not always manifest, but it's a standard feature. But in her, it's just an impermanent feature. It comes up at this one time, it may come up here and there in the past times, but then it goes away. Because yeah, otherwise we might think they don't know anything. But we show seers, they know so much. It is similar to the temporary desire of the confirmed materialist to give up wife and family because of some temporary spiritual urge. So it has to say, you know, that moment of, yeah, this is all nonsense, give it up. So, you know, it's there and then it goes back to normal. So for her, she'll have that feeling and then it'll go back to normal. Srila Prabhupada adds, following the footsteps of Mother Jashoda, everyone should follow this mentality of renunciation, right? Because for us, renouncing the material world should be a permanent situation, not a temporary one. Whatever wealth, opulence, or whatever else we may have belongs not to us, but to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate shelter of everyone and the ultimate owner of everything. As stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarva Bhutanam Yatva Mam Shantim Richati. The sages, knowing me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Right. So in this, I mean, is that all activities and all that, you know, are for Krishna's benefit. So it's not that whatever is there, we see how to see it in relation to ourselves, how we can get benefit. Right? The Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, that we see as whatever it is that can be controlled, we are the controller of it, and if we're not now, we should be. And so we make that endeavor. Right? And then the third one, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities. So that we think that I'm the one that's friend of everybody. I'm the one that's benefiting everybody. By my philosophy, by my dealings, everybody will be benefited. Like that. So, in other words, we get the person who's into power, who's into wealth, who's into sense gratification, but we also get the person who's into this nice, touchy-feely, you know, kind of, you know, I'm the fabulous kind of person. Right, so the whole New Age kind of thing, all these modern, you know, everybody and world without borders and all that kind of thing. It's the same kind of principle. So unless you understand that it's a world without borders because it's Krishna's world, you think, no, we'll behave nicely, we'll cooperate, that will make this fabulous world without borders where we can all be, you know, friends, you know, like that. That's material. That will give trouble. That will be an obstacle to devotional service. But you understand is world with no borders because it's Krishna's world. But unfortunately, people not seeing Krishna then see borders. So therefore, then, there's a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Is this a good example of how Mother Yashoda's got the complete understanding that she sees from all aspects of the position how
yes.
she is submitting to Krishna?
Yes, they know. Otherwise, how do they get here? You're talking about one of the few most exalted, most pious living entities in the cosmos. Not just our universe, the whole cosmos. So they won't know philosophy? But the point is it's about her affection for a child. That's the main thing she's absorbed in, because all that's to bring you to the position of Krishna as the Supreme Person, and then in Him as the Supreme Person, then worshipping in sweetness, and then in this parental affection, you know, and that full surrender. So then in that, she becomes absorbed in that position. So it's a temporary where it comes out, where all this kind of background stuff that the Shri may have or know is then applied. But in reality, it's not important for her service. Not that she can't explain it, it's just not important. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Also, those moments of Aishwarya actually increase the maturity or us of the residents of the world.
Oh, okay.
But then without those instances, it's incomplete.
Yeah. He does great things, but the uniqueness is he does them still as a human being.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like for Arjuna, he didn't open his mouth. He just showed outside because he's the Supreme Lord, took that forearm form and that whole thing. But here, it's just he opens his mouth because his mother told him to. You know, and then you see all that, you know, because everything is within him. You know, the other is he's just there showing what's going on in the universe. But with Mother Yashoda, he's showing actually what's inside him. You know. Yeah, it would be really tough for a dentist, right? You know, you know, you got to sit there and, you know, push this planetary system out of the way and this and that. But, you know, it'd be a bit of a trip, right?
Krishna doesn't have that kind of
knowledge. No, exactly. Yeah.
So we see here, sometimes we might be guilty of projecting that we see our Mother Yashoda, she's like this, so therefore I can also be in that similar kind of mentality.
Similar kind of mentality of understanding the Lord in full surrender and giving up all mundane identification as the Queen of Braj and all relationships and all that wealth and power and everything. You're saying following in that footstep?
No, it would be more...
Because that's what she did.
Yeah, but it would be more the other way, just saying...
So, in other words, Mother Yashoda gave up thinking philosophically and just got absorbed in the affection for a kid. So can we, following in our footsteps, do that for our mundane kid? Why would we think that?
Because we're attachment. To the position of mother or father.
That's there, but the point is it's still, where does it come from? Because Mother Yashoda is understanding, I'm not actually the mother, it's just the arrangement of Vishnu. Right? Like that. So the whole point is she'll go back to that aspect of that higher level of, you know, aspect of sweetness. But we're just trying to get out of our, arrangement of that appreciation of ourselves in Aishwarya and sweetness, you know, and appreciate Krishna. So you use whatever principles work. So he is the Supreme Lord. If that's what gets you to surrender, that's what you do. If his pastimes are so wonderful and attractive, that gets you to surrender, that's what you use. But But the general point, if you're confused, well, which one do I use? The basic, if you're asking the question, use the philosophy. Because the other one we have heard, we'd be absorbed. Does that make sense? That's it. It's that one thing keeps them going. Just that smile of Krishna, his little teeth coming out when he's drinking milk, that's what it completely absorbs. You know, his, that little bit of naughtiness and then that innocence and that, you know, that's what absorbs. So if having heard that, we're not absorbed, therefore it puts us on the platform of sadhana bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Vishnu Chakravarti is his elaborating Mother Yashoda's thinking process. Is this being revealed to him because he's an intimate devotee?
Is this being revealed to him? What does it matter? How do you want this to unfold? Means what are you looking for? That he's sitting there in his yogic position and everything, and then this bright light comes down, or even better, it can, like in the fourth, kind of one of those lightning bolts, not a single one, but that, you know, multiple ones, you know, like that that they use in the sci-fis, and then you see this aura around him, and then when he opens his eyes, you know, and then and the pupils should be like completely big and black, right, you know, like that, and then he sees, and then some trembling and all that kind of. Are we going the right direction, or you know, you say. The point is they're there. So, how it is they know and all that, they know. The point is all the devotees know all these other things. The Madhurya Rasa, then they may or may not know. The parental Rasa doesn't, because those two Rasas are inimical. They're enemies. Right? Because for the parent, you know, how does the kid grow up and now this whole thing like that? You know what I'm saying? You know, especially, you know, the son, big, you know, okay, they get married because this is part of the thing you do, and as parents you arrange that, but that they don't need my direction after they're married, and that they can actually function on their own, and they make their own money, could run their own house, do everything, right? You know, how is that possible? So it's inimical, the two rasas. Therefore, Krishna's, you know, Kishore, he's out there with the gopis dancing every night, but for Mother Yashoda, she's just his innocent child. And so any rumors about, that's why Prabhupada says it's an open secret. Everybody in Vrindavan knows, but at the same time, Mother Yashoda doesn't know, and it's not official, so you can't actually say this is what it is. Of course, you know, Jatila and Kotila spend their time trying to make it official, but they never do. You know what I'm saying? So when it comes to rasa, then there's no need of knowing how they know. It's not important for appreciating the rasa, because we're not in that position, so it's not going to happen for us. For us, things will be revealed by following the path of sadhana bhakti given by the acharyas, pleasing the spiritual master, Krishna being pleased. Then through that blessing, then it's revealed you know. That's how we're going to know. How these others know, what does it matter? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it's here, it's accepted by the acharyas, and so it does. Like that. So it's just one of the things that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur does, because the other acharyas are given various points. He just fills in aspects. I mean, he does so many things, but one of the things that's unique is he fills in aspects of the conversation, you know, either directly or in how they're thinking and things like that. Then we can appreciate, because the point is we appreciate more the mood and attitude of what she's doing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's good. Thus, Mother Yashoda completely surrendered unto the Supreme Lord. For the moment, she was rather disappointed, thinking, "My endeavors to protect my son by charity and other auspicious activities are useless. The Supreme Lord has given me many things, but unless he takes charge of everything, there is no assurance of protection." Because it's him, he's the protector, he's the maintainer. We can take part by doing and performing our duties. And in that, that may be the medium through which Krishna then arranges for our protection and maintenance. But it's actually Krishna who's doing it. Right? If we think that we're doing it, then we have a problem. Right? So, you know, I'm being practical, Prabhu. But the point is who's being practical? What's going on? No, we're taking part as an instrument in something that is supposed to be performed. And so taking part in that, that's what we're supposed to do. So simply asking how is being one being Krishna conscious in your day-to-day life, and then you just say, I'm just being practical, you know, unless it's a very subtle way of saying, I'm just being practical. In other words, whatever situation the Lord arranges, and then according to my understanding of my duties, then I try to apply myself as an instrument in the unfolding of that activity. And that way I'm just trying to do something that actually gives the best effect, because if I do something theoretical, it won't work. It has to actually be applicable. So therefore, I was just being practical to them. But there's a good chance that was not actually the translation of what they said. Right? We don't want to hear the translation. Right? So, yes.
So how can we balance between Krishna being the supreme controller and us performing our duties with 100% endeavor? Because many devotees, they say, okay, Krishna is in charge. I can do whatever and I'm just going to be perfect.
No, but if he's in charge and he's doing it, then you should do nothing.
That's even better.
But they don't do nothing. They actually get off the couch, walk to the fridge, and look through it carefully, and then pick something up and take it back to the couch. So if it's all up, then, you know, they leave it to Krishna. Just sit there, and then whatever comes, like the python sadhu, right? If you're supposed to get, you know, a bag of chips or whatever it is, it will come along of its own accord.
Outside.
Oh, I see. So when the bus truck goes by and it hits the bump and then a box falls off in your lap. Yeah. But then how do you open it? You know, then. Yeah. Oh, you were talking about from the wife's perspective. If you're going to do nothing, then better to sit outside so you don't get in the way. Because right? Yeah. You're messing up the cushions, right? But the point is then what's our service? If Krishna's doing everything, then what's our service? So we take part in Krishna's doing everything by doing what's the recommended activity for our position. So we know it's not that I'm doing it, that's what's the cause, it's Krishna causing it, but the unfolding of that activity is happening and I can take part within that as an instrument. Because either I can take part and do it in connection to Krishna, I can take part not doing it for Krishna and therefore it becomes part of karma, or I can not take part, you know, in the way of, and then let Krishna arrange it, but I'm not getting involved, but then you have to, generally one would have no attachment, so only renunciates might do that or something, the Babaji's or, you know, the Python Sadhu or like that, you know. Does that make sense? Or I can do nothing and sit there and expect whatever is the results of my previous karma and then, you know, just wait for it. So, but the point is that taking part as an instrument means we can either be the controller or the instrument. Because to do nothing, that's akarma, which means you're supposed to do something and you do nothing. And so then there's a reaction for that. So it's considered bad. It's not as bad as doing something you shouldn't do, but it's still considered bad, right? Like that. So that's why it's okarma, which means we take part in the transcendental activity. We take part in a transcendental consciousness in the prescribed activities. Vikarma means I don't do the right activities. Akarma means I don't do the right activities, I do wrong activities. Akarma means I don't do wrong activities, I don't do right activities, I just don't do anything. Right? So the couch potato is like the perfection of akarma. Right? And then okarma means then we're taking part in the transcendental activity. So we are taking part in our activities that we would think are karma, but we're not doing them to please ourselves, we're doing them to please Krishna. So that's why we're not used to that. I could do karma for myself, right? Or I don't see the benefit, so I do akarma. Or if I see the benefit in vikarma, I'll do that. Right? but to take part in the process seemingly of karma, but to not have be invested in the result for ourselves, that we're not used to. That's not something that we would take as an option. So that's the uniqueness of it. So it's just a matter of understanding more. Otherwise, that reaction that the devotee's getting is a reaction we see in Arjuna from the second chapter explanation of spiritual. So then Arjuna thinks, oh, okay, then I don't have to do all this. I'll just go to the forest and, you know, like that. But then Krishna points out about karma yoga. No, you have to take your situation, the activities of your situation, and connect that to Krishna. And then, better than that, is have the proper understanding. You know, you understand the philosophy and all these things. Along with that, then that's your action in Krishna consciousness. So, the solution is then understanding the third, fourth, and fifth chapters of Gita. But otherwise, if they're aware that there is something higher and I'm not actually a controller, then that's a good thing. But it's actually not actually dynamic yet. It hasn't become devotional service yet. Is that right? Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Mother Jashoda, by the grace of the Lord, could understand the real truth. But then again, the Supreme Master, by the influence of the internal potency, Yoga Maya, inspired her to become absorbed in intense maternal affection for her son. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, discerning the truth in this way, itam vidita tatvayam, she desired to give up her sense of possessiveness. But then the Lord, as a small boy, thought, who will cuddle me? Who will hold me? Right? Because he's doing all these things for his own happiness. Right? Because that's the prayojana. Since that's the prayojana, then prayojana is gained by abhideya and sambandha. So when sambandha is applied in abhideya, it gives prayojana. So therefore, you know, he's going to cuddle, who's going to hold him? Then that's the point, is that means then the activity of cuddling and holding has to be there. That means who would cuddle and hold other than someone who has that identity and therefore makes that endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Then is it that because Krishna displayed the majesty to Yashoda, that was the reason why temporarily the rasa which was being experienced was being suspended, and therefore she was speaking to Krishna, and now like Krishna is again there?
Yes, it means the idea is when he when he shows the universal form and she takes on that mood, then that's all part of just the pastimes. Right? So he's doing all this for his own happiness. But the point is there's more happiness in that affection between Mother Jashoda and her son. Right? So then it goes by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, goes back to that. You know, but because it's gone this way, then that sweetness will be even more tasty. So whenever somebody does something, when Krishna does something big, like I killed the demons or these other things because of that greatness of that there, the magnitude of it, the intensity, then it nourishes the love on the other side. Right? So the love and anxiety nourishes the love, you know, that's not an anxiety. And the love and not an anxiety nourishes the love and anxiety. That's the whole point. Is that's why there's the dynamic between the two. Is that? When he thought in this way, the very form of affection for a son, Putra Sneha Mayim, overcame Jashoda. Right? Because that's his ideas. That's what he's interested in. Srila Prabhupada adds, although Mother Jashoda understood the whole philosophy of life, at the next moment she was overwhelmed by affection for a son by the influence of Yoga Maya. Unless she took care of her son Krishna, she thought, how could he be protected? Right, because she's already understood everything's just arranged by the Lord. She should give up this whole sense of possessiveness and trying to control everything. And then, by Krishna's arrangement, the next moment, then Yogamaya, you know, then overcomes, and then she's overwhelmed, and then she's again just back to, well, you know, who's going to take care of her son? Yes.
How do we not see this as an interruption in affection?
How do we not see as an interruption in affection? Basically, from the principles that we don't know what affection is in the first place, so why would we see as an interruption? Right? Does that make sense? So, it goes back to the point is all these things are just to bring out all these flavors in the interaction between the Lord and the devotee. So by the one, then the opposite then becomes more tasty. Right? You know, when Krishna's not there, then when he is, then it's more, then the intensity of these, the gopis are with Krishna, right? At Radhakund. No? So, then they're going to be tasting that taste of being with him. But then after that, they all leave, and then they're not with him. So then, because being with him was so nice, therefore, not being with him is more intense. Right? Now, then, when they are able to be together again at Govindastali, then that, because of that intensity of separation, now the intensity of being together, of sambhog, is going to be even greater. Then in the morning when they leave to go back to their homes, then the separation is even more. So then when they come together at Radhakund, then it's going to be, again, the sambhog is going to be greater. So it's always nourishing itself. The point is in the material world, we think it's that all the emotions and everything is causing our distress. Hence the impersonal philosophy. Because we think that's the problem. But the real problem is not connecting it to Krishna. It has nothing to do with all these things. Right? So, not connecting to Krishna, being attached to the material energy, being attached to I am the controller and enjoyer, then that's going to give rise to thinking that if I get rid of all this, I get rid of my problem. But no, when you become attached to Krishna, you get rid of the problem. Does that make sense? So it's a different perspective. That's why, just like it's said, that for the karmi and the jnani. Now, socially, the jnani is in a higher position, right? Because they're renounced in that. So they're considered in a better position socially. And they have more philosophy and this and that. So by consciousness, they're also on a higher level. They're on Vijnanamoy instead of on Jnanamoy. Right? So now, that's all very well and good. And then we see the step above that is then Anandamoya. So now, if you have a Maya body who's well situated, becomes a devotee, and you have a Karmi who well situated, becomes a devotee, then the natural conclusion would be, therefore, the jnani devotee will actually be in a better position of appreciating bhakti than one in the karma. But in actuality, the jnani is at a disadvantage because he thinks activities, emotions, relations are actually the impediment to spiritual life. So he can't appreciate the transcendental relationships and emotions. Does that make sense? So that's the point. But the karmi can see all this is so nicely done because he appreciates good facility. And that the devotees are making that all for Krishna based on their love. So for him it's very easy. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So in the same way, in the modern Mayavadis, where we throw out all the tradition and all this thing because this is all the problem, it's all about our sense gratification and that, so therefore then it's just a matter of this impersonal, everyone all together and everybody, you know, I am you and you are me and we are all together kind of jazz. Then that is, you know, we'll all just be happy together, why can't we all just cooperate? But you know, the we, it's all impersonal, it's a concept. And so therefore we think it's those good qualities applied how I think they should be. Right? Free from karma and jnana. Right? Because that's controller and enjoyer. But I'm retaining, I'm the friend. So therefore anything that has control and enjoyment to it, whether it's in the material or spiritual pastimes, I have an aversion towards. I only have an appreciation of qualities that I will categorize as Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, as friendship. Does that make sense? You know, beneficial to everybody and all that. And, you know, how you say, liberty, fraternity, equity, this. I only see that. Anything outside of that is a problem. Right? Because the point was, is who led the revolution? Robespierre. But then when he got power, then whose head come off? His head. Right? And because it goes on, you know, and nothing works, because the common person can't do, and after a while, you know, people get bored of the revolution and all that, you know. There's only so many pipes in a, you know, city courtyard to put heads on, right? So now they're all full. Now what do we do? Right? And who wants to carry them over to the next one? You know, that's like a kilometer away or something, you know. So then, hey, like that. So then they give up the revolution. And so then what happens? There's a vacuum there. You need management. Then who comes along? Napoleon. Right? Because he can organize it. And what can they say? You know, they already had their fun and, you know. Does that make sense? So, the whole point comes down is that they have an aversion to anything that's tradition, anything that's authority, anything that's obviously for someone else's benefit. Because it should be, no, you work, if someone works for everyone's benefit, means I'll get benefit. If they work for their benefit, I don't get benefit. You see how the thing's working? It sounds great. Oh, we work for everyone's benefit means I want to get benefit. If you work for your benefit, I won't get any. So it's not actually about everyone getting. It's about, okay, everyone gets, so I'll also get. You know what I'm saying? So it, and everyone getting doesn't mean that it's necessarily beneficial. Right? It's just that I see the benefit for myself. Therefore, I will break down authority and tradition so that everybody can get, so I'll get. So therefore, it's very, very, how you say, capitalistic. So the very thing that, you know, all these, you know, capitalists and bureaucracies and, what do you call it, corporations and all this that they're against, it's just that they're getting all the benefit, I'm getting none. So you want to break that down so it's now easily available that I can get some. Right? But the problem is they're doing it in the standard sense. So now if we're looking at the standard sense in its actual original position of relationship with Krishna and these emotions and endeavors being done in connection with Krishna, they take on their natural perfection. But I have an aversion to anything like that because I can't discriminate. I don't have the intelligence because what's my philosophy? It's all one anyway. So that means lack of discrimination. So I can't tell the difference between material and spiritual. Though I claim I'm more intelligent because I know so much, I'm educated, I use logic. But in actuality, you're actually, when it comes to practical intelligence, actually less than everybody else. Because everybody else can discern where the actual benefit is and not. You know what I'm saying? So that's the fun part of how Maya cheats everyone. You think you're controller, but you're going to die. You think you're enjoyer, but your senses, you know, give out on you. You're old and you can't eat anything anyway. You know? And you think it's all about, you know, everyone and benefiting everyone and that, but it's actually, you can't even discriminate. So you don't even know who's a friend and who's not and who's this or that. And so for the cause, then you'll give up all relationships. The cause, you sort of sacrifice yourself. No, you'll sacrifice everyone. You know? So, does that make sense? So, it's actually a weaker position. We're taking it, no, it's a stronger, this will hold everything together, but it actually won't. Does that make sense? Because previously in reading all these pastimes, these points have never, ever, ever been a point to even consider. Right? But now, because of this modern insistence, I mean this insistence on the modern politically correct perspective of seeing relationships and, you know, what's correct and not, and emotions and what's their value and all that, then you can, you would, by the mundane, this modern principle, all these devotees would be in a weakened position. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. It's actually very, very detrimental. You can't even just read Krishna's pastimes and appreciate. You have to, at all times, fend off all this nonsense that's being preached as this is going to make our movement, you know, wonderful and whole and complete and but it's without Krishna. Krishna is complete, therefore everything emanating from Him is complete and perfect. Since we're imperfect, everything emanating from us is less perfect. Right? Does that make sense? So, people may say all they want, it sounds very good, but this is the whole point. It's just New Age Mayavadi instead of, you know, traditional Mayavadi. That's why it's so dangerous, because it sounds like it's the perfect blend, you know, the balance between this you know, dichotomy between karma and jnana, and so we're too fanatic or too this. We've had the middle path. But it's the middle path. It's just a mushmash path of Mayavadi. So it won't get anybody anything, because Mayavadis don't actually get anything. Impersonalists, yes. Mayavadis, no. Because impersonalists, it's all Brahman, so it's all transcendental. So they don't see any problem in anything. The Mayavadis discriminate, say this is good, this is bad. So they have a dualistic mentality, right? We say Krishna is non-different. Sarvam kalvidam Brahman, it's all Krishna. But there's variety. So because they don't accept variety, then they'll say this is not Brahman, so it's not Krishna. So they're actually, even though they claim to be a Dvaitist, they're hardcore, you know, Dvaitists. That's the mode of ignorance. It takes something that looks one way and turns it around. The Mayavadis are the ones that can't accept everything's one. And we're the ones that can. But we know it's one with variety. And they'll think it's be one. That's why he probably uses the term exclusive monism. Because you can't have one with no variety. It doesn't exist. It's an illusion. So anyone in illusion, will they get liberated? No. So therefore, if the Mayavadis won't get liberated and they're so austere and pious, why should this modern, impious, politically correct philosophy give anybody any benefit in spiritual life? Does that make sense? Yes.
But the blessing is like when it is like supported by leaders. Like
that's another thing. The point is in this forum we're just discussing what is the philosophy and all that. And so if the shoe fits, one wears it. Does that make sense? So in other words, then we apply it to ourselves in our situation, because we can't do anything about someone else's consciousness. We can only do about our own consciousness. So we change our consciousness, then we won't be, we'll be unaffected. And if there is an opportunity to have an effect, we'll have. But if we don't change our consciousness, we just go on, what can I do? The leaders are like this and that. Because people can say that at all times, all places, all circumstances, in any situation. It's always about the leaders. You know, down to the family, the child saying, well, how can I be, you know, the leaders of the family, you know, the parents, and they're thinking about their parents, and they're thinking, you know, and you say, so you will always have that. So one has to go beyond that to that one can be Krishna conscious despite that. That's the point, the independence of bhakti, is that despite whatever is going on, you know, whether the leaders of society are shape-changing, you know, reptiles, it doesn't matter. Lord Chaitanya didn't care that the government was Mohammedan. You go on, bhakti is independent. So we don't care. You know what I'm saying? So. Yes. So that's the whole point, is that's what we're discussing here. How can we apply it in our life? And if we are in a position of leadership, that we apply it in our life so that the good effect then comes upon those who are dependents. And if we're not, then we can function and go on despite anybody else. Because that's the whole point. The mission is so perfect, even if no one else in the whole world follow practices Krishna consciousness, a single individual can and go back to Godhead. That's the beauty of it. So when we say, no, unless everybody's doing it, I can't do. That's not, one, a devotional, and two, it's not a, you know, how you say, a higher position. That's the position of a Shudra.
That was also my point. It is just that when you see that there are actually someone like here, short like that, one so much more peaceful spread, like that.
The point is The point is we ourselves become unaffected by a lack of Krishna consciousness, and then by our performance of devotional service we advance, and in doing that it may have effect on others. That's all we can do, is worrying about that they're all like this and this one and that. Then all it does is cultivate the sentiment of fearing, like eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. Conspiracy theories, this, that, are all, it increases fearing. Right? So we want to avoid that, because one who surrenders to Krishna has no fear. Therefore, they can be alone, and it still works. So the point is if we're in such a position, we apply it for ourselves. If we're not in such a position, what can we do about it anyway? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. It's when we give that up, then we stop trying to be the controller or the enjoyer or the friend. We just are a devotee and just try to serve Krishna. Then our own life will go more smoothly. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. Oh.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanande.